This is the Age Real Footy Podcast. Coming up, last gasp heartbreak on Sunday left Carlton without a win for the season. We'll discuss what that means for them and Brendan Bolton going forward. We'll talk Richmond's big win, how the loss of Callan Ward will impact the Giants, preview the big Easter Monday clash, and much, much more.
Crucy just doing the old ragdoll and Reed, and it creates an opportunity for Bray. Shaw! Bending, nailed it. Kangaroos Brown out the back. Zerha can run in. He shouldn't miss from there. And the Kangaroos are out.
Here's a roundabout, the forward 50 here. He's the target. Up he goes! Go on, McDonald, Tim and Woody. Make it seven. It's already a personal best. Go on! Yeah. He does! He's kicked seven!
Well, here we are after round four and introducing the First Lady of Footy, Caroline Wilson.
Jake, please. Hello, it's lovely to see you.
And back on deck, another eminent veteran, Greg Baum.
Been a long time, you guys. This is heritage round come early, really, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it is with us.
Speak for yourself.
It's a great privilege to be the youngest person here. Doesn't often happen. First, we'll go to Carlton. And before we do, let's have a listen to that last moment of the game, the Jack Bowes goal that broke Carlton hearts.
Pick it up, Sexton. Oh. Big decision. Non-decision paid. Play on the call. They're rabbit in there. We're down to 18 seconds. Right with a little give. Bowes, yes! Bowes puts it through!
Right, Caro, what did you make of that game? And what do you think, more importantly, what do you think the fallout will be at the club?
Look, it was a pretty ordinary game. Carlton somehow found a way to lose it. They were headed, they got to three goals up. It looked like they'd done enough. The immediate reaction was unbelievable goal by Bowes. The mark by Ryan, should it have been paid? Would it have made a huge amount of difference? I think he's been... Liam Jones, I'm sorry. He's been fantastic. Patrick Cripps, I just have so much sympathy for. And the implications are going to be enormous. I mean, it can't help but put more pressure on the coach and the list management committee.
Yeah, so I don't think, when I wrote on the weekend, I don't think they'll move on the coach at round four. I think we've gone past that time. But if it happens, it's death by a thousand cuts, Caro, isn't it?
I sort of feel, Bormy, that there'll be a bit of movement in the coaching ranks this year. I wonder what's going to happen at Sydney, whether there's a decision at some point to cut ties with John Longmire and, you know, a mutual decision. I know it's very un-Sydney-like. Brad Scott, I know, had a win on the weekend, but a huge backlash from North Melbourne fans in recent weeks towards Brad Scott. I just feel there's movement imminent. I didn't feel that Brendan Bolton would last beyond this year, and look, I still don't.
There's no gain sacking him mid-season.
No, they shouldn't sack him now.
Jake will give you the stats about Carlton in the last 30 years, how little it's got them, by sacking mid-season. So I expect he'll see the season out, but they kind of need to show more than they have. Yeah. That said, they've made very small improvements. They've lost all four games this year, but they haven't been thrashed by anyone. They made a couple of basic errors on the weekend, and I don't know that you put it down to the coach when they failed to put a man on the goal line in that last play that won Gold Coast a game. That's just football sense. Players should be able to work that out for themselves. I'm actually weirdly Pollyanna-ish about Carlton. I know it's not what a newspaper person is supposed to be.
Maybe that's the Collingwood coming out there.
He's secretly enjoying it.
I think they have forgotten how to win, despite what Bolton says. And I think at some point they'll have a win, and then they may have a small string of wins, and they'll feel better about themselves.
Do you think they can be like Brisbane last year?
They're on the same trajectory, aren't they? Brisbane won some games last year, lost a lot by small margins, and now we're, you know, a year later, and this is the way this competition shifts. We're talking about them as a potential
favourite. And
I want to jump in, Caro. Caro, why is Brendan Bolton so different from Chris Fagan? Because there was absolutely no questioning of Chris Fagan last year. In fact, people sensed that he was really taking them somewhere.
Well, Jake, that's obvious. For a start, they won, five games last year at Brisbane? They had all those narrow losses. They were fabulous to watch. They were high scoring. They could have won another five or six games. And Chris Fagan had been in the job, was it 1 year less than Brendan Bolton? I think the two were, and the two clubs 2 or 3 years ago seemed to be on a similar trajectory. Brisbane, Carlton won two games last year and were thrashed multiple times. You also heard, and clearly that's emerged as probably being true now that Robert Walls has moved in to mentor and have a look at what's going on in there. But you just felt that Brendan and his senior coaches, he had so much on his plate, it was difficult for him to build relationships with them or to get that relationship working properly. He didn't have an experienced CEO the way Chris Fagan did. He didn't have an experienced footy manager. That was all being moved around. So many differences.
No, I accept those
Carlton's
differences.
Right in the spotlight in Melbourne, isn't it? Brisbane probably had a little bit of grace just by the fact that they're out on the frontier.
And Brisbane had Luke Hodge. They brought in Luke Hodge. They brought in Charlie Cameron. And now they've got Lachie Neale. And I've strongly of the view that Carlton need to get a Lachie Neale equivalent at the end of this year to make themselves get that sense of improvement. Because really a lot of it's about the fans, Caro. The fans are screaming. And that is where the pressure will come on the regime. Not from the media. It will come from their own.
But it also, I think, hurt Brendan last year that he just, some of the comments he made post-match, when you compare his losing press conferences to Chris Fagan's, Chris Fagan just seemed to handle it so much better. And there wasn't this robotic sort of corporate speak is the wrong word, but you just couldn't make sense of what Brendan Bolton was trying to say. That was the other problem.
Now, the other big issue of the weekend, other than Carlton, there was a lot of stories, but I think the big picture issue, Bormy was scoring. And it's about a goal down on rounds 1 to 4 last year, despite the rule changes, including the much praised and vaunted 666 and the kick-in rule. Scoring's gone backwards, and so have a lot of the kicks. There's backward kicks seem to be the bane of the competition.
And you can add to that, we're just going through some numbers this morning, the number of inside 50s has not increased from last year to this over the first four rounds. That's the one thing that you thought might have increased, this 25 extra opportunities in a game approximately to get the ball straight out of the centre into the front 50, and it's just not happening.
Caro, do you think we're going to see some further trials of rules? I heard David King suggesting that a backward kick play on in the back half of the ground could be looked at. Steve Hocking brought these changes in. They were not that radical, and they don't seem to have moved in the direction that the AFL wanted.
Look, it's four rounds in. Far too early to be doing anything yet. I still don't understand why they don't reduce interchange numbers. I think it's too early to worry about the low scoring. I think if this is continuing to be a trend by round 12 or 13, I do think they'll have a look at a lot of things at the end of the year. I don't like the play on if you kick backwards. I note that Alistair Clarkson says he's lost and that a lot of coaches feel lost. They tend to make those comments after they've lost, by the way. I mean, but you know, he is probably the leader, isn't he? He's the great leader of coaches at the moment. So you do take note of what he says.
Isn't there an argument that the coaches are winning, Bormy?
Well, of course they are.
Against the game?
Well, they are. I mean, they're control freaks by nature. They have to be. They want as many stoppages as they can because at that point they can control the game. They can't control it when it's flowing. So everything they do is going to be aimed at controlling the game, which is a defensive mindset. It happens not just in footy, in all sports. And what we've learned over the last 10 years or so, as rules have been brought in and tinkered with and abandoned, is the rule of unintended consequences. And I would worry about a mid-season move to try and address this supposed scoring drought. Well, no, it's real at the moment because we just don't know what we do know is the coaches will find a way of dealing with it.
Now, two other teams were winless prior to this round, Melbourne and North Melbourne. North had a big breakthrough, Caro, against Adelaide. Does that result tell us more about North Melbourne or more about Adelaide?
Oh, there were serious concerns at Adelaide. And that was, again, a pretty ordinary sort of scrappy game between two teams who look pretty ordinary to be brutal. They were the two, the Carlton, Gold Coast being the other one. Look, it's great that North had a win, but it's not, things aren't good at North Melbourne. You know, 17,000 people turned up to that game. One of their worst ever crowds against Adelaide. They're going to be hosting Essendon on Good Friday. You wonder, clearly I reckon Essendon fans will outrank the North Melbourne supporters, even though it's not their home game.
They've got a nice gate out of it, so that'll be good for them.
Yeah, but, you know, they're on the nose, North, at the moment, with their own supporters. It was a fighting win. I don't know what's going on at Adelaide.
Brad Scott had challenged the players to be more aggressive. They were. But do you feel that's not sustainable? Is that your...
I don't feel North are going to have a great season. But I'm worried. I'm really worried about Adelaide. I mean, we all thought Adelaide were going to bounce back this year. We know they've got issues in their defence. You see Taylor Walker trying to rev up the groups at three-quarter time when he's, you know, barely had a kick. I think Adelaide are a real worry.
I think something's rotten in Denmark or some part of South Australia. Bormy, what about the Demons? Now, that was a game, I think, piloted on the back of Max Gawn.
It was, and it didn't they desperately need it? And they got it. And look, I'll take Caro's earlier point that they're only four rounds in. I wasn't off the Demons after three losses because I still think they're a top four side. I still think they're...
You think this will kickstart this season?
Threat. Well, it showed us again what they can do. Flying on from Gawn, Nathan Jones, I thought maybe he was starting to move onto the fringes of that team and maybe even being put in that awful position of a great and loyal servant who, when his team's time finally comes, is not there. It was starting to look like that for Nathan Jones, maybe we'd forgotten just how valuable he is to that team. They'll take a lot out of that game. It was only Sydney. Sydney aren't going to be very good this year, that's clear, but you still have to put the win on the board. They did. They looked like Melbourne, much more like the Melbourne at the end of last year again, didn't they?
What did you think, Kara?
Sydney were pretty ordinary. Lance Franklin looked horribly human. And
couldn't kick more than about 50 metres.
No, that was
telling, wasn't it?
That was a disturbing thing. You just feel again that they've had this wonderful coach who's taken them to finals every single year and usually to the top four and often to grand finals. He's always got such faith in his players, and you just wonder whether, you know, the knocks on John are that sometimes he's just too consistent and too refusing to sort of change anything. No, I thought that Melbourne would win, and I still feel they'll make finals and go a fair way in.
Well, a team that did change things was your team, Caro, Richmond. We'll be
Can't
talking
believe
about
it hasn't
them,
left the show, Jake.
Them and Essendon after the break.
If you like what you're hearing, let us know about it. Head to iTunes, rate, review, and subscribe.
Rosie's hands were clean that time. But the Tigers intervene, and Bolton's so creative. Lambert with the kick. Down to Caddy. Can he stand his ground? He did. He didn't take the mark. Lynch gives it back. A second chance. A soccer. We wait. We wait no longer. Dusty who?
Well, that was, I think, Caro, in terms of Richmond performances, I'd say that's their best since the Premiership. I know they had a great year last year winning games, but that was goosebump stuff watching some of those young players. Particularly young Jack Ross, Noah Bolter, Stack, who I think has been a revelation in his couple of games, come in with the big four not playing and get the win.
Yeah, look, I think a lot of those Premiership players were stung by some of the criticism last week that, you know, what with the really good players out there made to look human and actually pretty ordinary, and maybe they were ordinary players all along. I don't think Damien Hardwick played on that, but I think it did sting them. And we saw a lot. Well, Brandon Ellis didn't even play in the Prem. Did he? Yes, sorry, he did.
He played in the Premiership. He didn't play in the Grand. In the
last week,
final.
Last year. But he stood up. He was wonderful. I heard what Anthony Hudson just said in the commentary. I think the same comment was made by the acting captain, Shane Edwards, who said Dusty might have to come back through the twos.
And did hear that.
I would go as far as to say it's one of Damien's best ever home and away victories. I mean, when you look at what he was up against, going over to Adelaide Oval, funnily enough, the scene of his first ever win as coach of Richmond, I would say, and you know, to say he's like a proud father and he wanted a beer. And because the environment he has created there over the past 2 years has been so good, you felt they were able to withstand the bad. Dylan Grimes, I mean, he's always been an unsung hero in my view, underneath the Alex Rance shadow, and he was mighty.
Well, Bormy, they would not have won without Grimes in the last... I mean, Grimes's performance in the last quarter was stunning.
It was exceptional, but they would not have won without Lynch either. And so the environment is everything, and we know that footy clubs have to have strong culture to succeed. They wouldn't have won without Grimes for sure, but still bringing Lynch into what looked like a big five, which was reduced to a big one, but he was an important one.
Well, in a year when goal kicking accuracy has been so bad, yeah. Gee, he's a cool customer under pressure, isn't he?
Yeah.
He kicked absolutely beautifully. Port Adelaide really disappointing though. again, I have to look at the negative.
Yeah, and how do we feel about, it's a technical free kick, but the second goal to Lynch, Caro, where there's a push in the back in the goal square, is that a rule that needs to be looked at? Like back to the centre and give a free kick? It just seems to me that the price you pay for something that they may not pay at all, it's a very whimsical sort of piece of umpire.
And what's the opponent supposed to do? Look,
young Ryan Burton, by the way.
Yeah, and I think and you know, Dersma would be the other one who'd be ruining, you know, great mark and then missing the goal. Bormi, I think this is a malaise across a competition. Players playing for free kicks.
And the penalty that comes from that and ensues from that, I have the same feeling about the 50-metre penalty many times. You're paying too big a price for an infringement that's really only just that, an infringement.
Well, Caro,
the double goal, I think, is way too big a price. And there are a couple of instances on Friday nights of late challenges in marking duels on the half-back flank, which become a goal at the other end of the ground. I mean, I don't think the game's meant to work that way, is it?
Well, except they're down on goals. They probably need every goal they can get at AFL HQ. The other one was Ben Brown, of course, just to segue back to that. A bit of acting that's copped a bit. He's copped a bit of criticism.
Although I sort of heard what his teammate said, Jack Zabel, yesterday, that he was up in the air already and he does have that ungainly gait. He's clearly guilty of a bit of acting, but I don't think it was nearly as bad as what some people are saying.
We'll move from Port and Richmond, obviously, to Essendon. They had a big win, and Anthony McDonald tipping Woody, 7 goals, which was just astonishing. And I think they kind of ambushed Bormi. They kind of ambushed the Brisbane Lions, who've been, you know, full of confidence and surging with good form, and suddenly the game's gone really after 15 minutes.
Well, Essendon, I feel, are going to be a little bit like that this season because they're so quick and their way of playing is to move the ball so quickly. On their day, they're going to do that to some teams, and Brisbane were probably vulnerable, as you say. And I noted that John Worsfold was downplayed, if anything, McDonald tipped Woody's 7 goals after the game, as if to say, well, he was on the end of a lot of good play up the field, which he was. So I find Essendon hard to read this year for that reason. I think their best days will be like that, but their worst days will be horrible.
Zach Merritt was unbelievable after some ordinary start to the season. That was one of the great... I was at the MCG on Saturday. That was like... You'd pay to watch that. He might have played it down. But what, 5 goals from set shots, 2 on the run, a heap of touches. It was the perfect game of football. He was magnificent, Tippin Woody.
But this is what I'm saying. He barely got a touch in the first 2 rounds.
I know.
And yet there he was, the topical player of the round, nearly.
Well, I've got Cale Hooker back, who is obviously structurally very important to them, Caro. They've got Danaher potentially... We'll see, but it potentially coming back for Good Friday, or if not, then Anzac Day. Has the momentum? Are Essendon back in town, or is this, or is it too early to sort of call that?
Oh, I think it's too early to call, but they've had a good win. They've had 2 good wins, and they're 2-2, which most of the good teams are. So I'm not at all worried about Essendon at the moment. No, not at all. I did think, you know, the coach was under huge amount of pressure.
Was that a bit over the top?
Well, yeah, probably was, actually.
It was 0-2. They weren't 0-4.
I said this last week, Jake. They are the most political football club in the competition. They have got some...
Hang on. I beg to differ. I would say that there's a club around Royal Parade that...
Worse,
the money men
worse
get involved.
Worse than Carlton. And when the coterie groups get involved and they talk to players, which they shouldn't be doing, I think you get this sort of... feeling of unease, and it's a poison that can spread through a footy club.
Do you think also there's a sense of, as an outsider, if you look at what happened to Matthew Knights, you get treated a bit differently at Windy Hill with the coteries and the shadow people?
All of that. And I also think that, you know, there was such a lacklustre performance on the footy field, and the players they just didn't look as though they cared. Certainly the GWS game was embarrassing, and then you've got the coach very even and not losing his cool. The thing about John Worsfold is it's when his back's against the wall, he just always turns around and produces.
Well, he did that at West Coast for me.
He did it a couple of times at West Coast. He went and took them to the top and then, you know, rode them to the bottom and then back up to the top. And as Caro says, he's temperament doesn't seem to change, so either week to week or era to era.
But last year, remember, after the sacking of Mark Neild, he had a crack at a press conference, and he did again 2 weeks ago with that ridiculous, when James Heard sort of told Mark Robbins that he wanted to coach again or whatever. I don't know what really went on there, but you saw Woosher.
Never say never, he said.
Yes, but then his running mate at the head, not running mate, I mean, they're good friends, he and Mark Robinson, and he wrote that James Heard would love to coach again. And then the question was asked of Worsfold, and he was so strong. I mean, that was the strongest you've seen him on anything all year. And then they come out and have a great win against Melbourne and another one on the weekend.
Now, what about St Kilda, Bormie? That there's a bit of an unsung story going on here. They've won 3 games. Some people didn't think they'd win many more than this season. They've not had Carlisle, who's arguably their best player. Jack Stevens had mental health issues and been in and out and certainly not been up to that level. And Roberton's going to miss the rest of the season and may never play again. Paddy McCartan, of course, indefinite. Hanbury, nowhere to be seen, their star recruit. And here they are at 3-1.
You can only say salute, can't you? They've defied us all the pundits. It looks to me like they've simplified their game a little bit. They've not tried to be as precise in what they do. I guess losing Roberton out of the back line, for one, means they had to do that because he was a good user of the ball out of the back line. So they're going a little bit longer. They're playing to their strengths. They're showing confidence in each other, which they haven't always done in the past. Yesterday, I guess the only caveat is that by the last quarter, their opponent was very banged up. And
we'll just go through the Hawthorn injuries. They had Stratton concussed, and they also had Cousins off the field.
Yeah.
And they lost O'Meara before the start of the game.
And there are a couple of other guys who are pretty sore as well. So, but I'm not saying that in any way to take credit away from St Kilda.
Who went into the game without all the good players that Jake's
right,
mentioned.
Yeah. So, I guess it comes back to a constant theme these days, and that's the competition is probably more even than we allow for, and 3 losses or 3 wins at the start of the year, we probably exaggerate both ways, don't we, Caro? Because
we do, but Alan Richardson went into the season under more pressure than Brendan Bolton, and I remember going out to St Kilda and it being put to me that they had, forget the Hanbury, that shadow hovered over them, really, didn't it?
The off-field rumours
as well as the banged-up body. They'd brought in so much premiership experience off the field. They completely redesigned
the decks of coaching.
They changed the game plan, and they felt confident. And everything they were saying to me pre-season has played out as the season has started. So I think St Kilda deserve a big tick, despite the fact we're only 4 rounds in.
Well, we're only 4 rounds in. And we're going to talk more about Geelong and the Giants and look ahead to Easter Monday. But first, just between us.
Just between us. Welcome to another edition of Just Between Us. And off the bench and off the supplemental selection period, we've got not even working in sport at the moment. Anthony Colangelo back again. He was impressive find in the last couple of years, and he's back. Anthony.
It's good to be back in the hallowed halls of Whispers, Dan.
It's good to have you here. Anthony, we start this week with Nathan Freeman, the former St Kilda player and Collingwood player. Obviously had a terrible run with injuries over his time at both of those clubs. He's playing VFL footy for Frankston, started the season in very good form. Despite Frankston's struggles, he's been on fire. Just between us, he's outside chance perhaps for a spot, a mid-season draft spot or a spot next year, but he's also doing a bit of work in player management. He's
really?
Spotted at Icon Park on Saturday alongside his manager, Robbie D'Orazio of Connors Sports Management, and just helping out there. So perhaps if a long-term career in footy doesn't work out, maybe we'll be dealing with Nathan Freeman, player agent extraordinaire.
So is he managing his own return?
Exactly right, a little bit of that.
Churn, just between us, one of the big talking points out of Friday night's game between Collingwood and the Bulldogs was the bizarre scene at the first centre bounce of Tom Liberatore walking up to Collingwood ruckman Brody Grundy and trying to pull his sock down. Quite an unusual thing to see on a footy field.
Tom's an unusual person.
He is an unusual person. But just between us, understand that the sock wasn't the only thing he was trying to pull down. He was also trying to take off Brody Grundy's shin pad, the shin pad that he wears to jump up in the ruck and protect his shin. So obviously didn't work because Brody had quite an unbelievable game, but I think it's good to see that sledging and mind games going to another level there.
That's an extraordinarily rascally bit of shin boner spirit there from Tom Liberatore. Maybe he should move to North like his dad was briefly back in the day. Anthony, finish up today. Speaking of North Melbourne Football Club, yeah. Moana Hope was axed by them, not offered another contract. And I don't think they're all that happy with the way things have worked out there. She had an Instagram post that she posted the day after her delisting, after she was informed she wasn't going to be there, and now she questioned the club's player welfare. And then she didn't, just between us, she didn't rock up to the best and fairest either. And it's hard to see, having spoken to a few other AFLW clubs, to see her getting another go, despite her being the fourth leading goal kicker in the history of AFLW.
Another go at any other club?
Any other club. I'd be surprised. You never know, but I'd be surprised.
Quite extraordinary given where she came from the year before the league started.
Indeed. Face of the league, you could say.
Unbelievable stuff, Churn.
Anthony, thank you very much for floating in from the business section. We look forward to reading your daily column on the share market. Just between us.
Just between us.
He hands it off to Selwood. He runs down the spine. Blasts it long, got it towards Duncan, Parfitt, Dangerfield from a stand start from 48, nails it.
Take a bow, Graham Myers.
Well, Geelong, a few goals up down there, playing the Giants who'd never won there. The Giants captain down with a knee injury. Who would have thought that GWS would get up and win that game? Jimmy Bartel had quietly, I believe, now with the Giants predicted that his new team would get up. Caro, is that the biggest win?
Well, he did it. He predicted it talking to us last week, sitting in that chair, Jake.
So not very quietly at all.
He was talking it.
I think he'd said it elsewhere, but a bit more confidently.
Yes, he did. He did.
But is that the biggest win of the season by any team?
Upset for mine.
Most consequential result.
I think as road trips go, it was equal to what Richmond was able to do.
No disrespect to Richmond, I think it was fantastic. I think it was even more significant.
Well, in terms of their history and their future, I think in terms of their history, it's massive because they've never been able to win there. In terms of their future, they have set up their season and rightly now rank among the premiership favourites. Of course they can win it without Callan Ward. I mean, West Coast won it without their best midfielder and their best ruckman last year. I think that Greater Western Sydney have got a wonderful midfield. To see Geelong beaten at Geelong is always a shock.
But particularly from in front and with a player down. I mean, I think you can plan for
players
being out.
I think he
out.
Did his bit at three-quarter time, though, Jake, even though he couldn't take the field. Apparently, the words he said to his team at three-quarter time, Callan Ward, were inspirational, and they are not being played down behind the scenes at the Giants.
I think it's a significant win because we probably all slightly had the sense that GWS's window was closing. It had been open for the last 3 years. They'd made two preliminary finals and not won. I just felt there was this sense that their first period of ascendancy might have come and gone. And looking at that win, just no. They've still got the talent.
Not
they're
me, Bormy. I had them in my top four.
I had them fifth. But the Jacob Hopper.
But you say four, you say five. That's not the premiership. It's still edging towards the edge of their window, and I'm with you that they're still very much in prayer. I think they're the next likeliest team to West Coast now.
Right now they do look that. Jacob Hopper and Tim Taranto, I don't know what you thought, Bormy. I thought that they almost seemed to grow as Callan Ward left the field, that these guys took ownership of that team. Stephen Cornelio, I mean, we're starting to now see what he's close to a champion player.
Well, we've seen this in recent years, haven't we, with the Bulldogs. When Bob Murphy went down early in the season, they won the premiership. We saw last year with Collingwood, with all the injuries from in their back line, they didn't win the premiership, but they were two minutes away from winning the premiership. So we're probably There is a template there that players rising to the occasion, and maybe more quickly than we ever imagined they can.
Caro, I just want to ask you about the Sydney market. Now, this is the first time since the Giants have come in that they are a long, long way clear of the Swans. What impact is that going to have up in Sydney, where you spend a bit of time?
Oh, look, I think they're still a long way behind the Swans in terms of recognition.
But will there be a bit of a groundswell for them away from the Swans?
I don't see that necessarily happening. I think what they have managed to do, and this will mean that I don't think they'll catch the Swans for a long, long time, but they're a footy club. They feel like a footy club. They've felt like a footy club for 5 years. You know, they take on the AFL. They're not like the Gold Coast. They don't feel recipient to me anymore.
They're feisty, aren't they?
Yeah, they don't feel franchised to me. And despite the fact that, you know, there was criticism of the stadium deal, I think Giants Stadium is a great deal for them. So they still don't get the numbers at their games anywhere near like the Swans get. But no, I think all power to them. I just wonder where they take the cup if they ever do win it.
Blacktown.
Don't know. I don't think they go to Blacktown.
You just go to the top of the Sydney Harbour Bridge. That's what you do in Sydney.
They'll go to Canberra, and whoever's in government, they'll...
Well, they play in Canberra this weekend, and they've made a big success of that. Now, I'm a fan, and I agree with Bormy. I think they deserve to be maybe one rung below West Coast at the moment. And I'm not sure... You know, Sydney are a great club. They'll turn this around, but I don't see them doing it this year. So you're right. It'll be a big year for them to make the finals for the first time without the Swans.
Now, let's look ahead to one of the best games in every season nearly. I look forward to this. Hawthorne Geelong on Easter Monday. Hawthorne have got some injuries, but they should get, hopefully, Stratton and O'Meara back, which would bolster them a lot. And there's Dangerfield under some MRO scrutiny. Caro, is this still the biggest item in footy in terms of a genuine rivalry and a game that you look forward to?
Oh, I'd rank the showdown ahead of it, because the showdown has a way of being a showdown if the two teams are, you know, 15th and 18th. But it's a wonderful game. It's the best MCG blockbuster, and I don't have any real concerns. I'm predicting that Patrick Dangerfield will be fine, and I think it's going to be a great game all over again, because they're both doing all right, these two clubs, at the moment.
Yeah, Bormy, what's your take? I've got a sneaky feeling Hawthorne, they're going to play very well. I'm not going to definitively say they're going to win. They'll be underdogs in this game, but I'm sure they will rise against the Cats.
Well, a Hawthorne win would play into the mythology of this rivalry, wouldn't it? It was founded on the 2008 grand final, and Geelong, I forget who it was, declaring they wouldn't ever lose to Hawthorn again. Was it
the Kennett curse we had?
And then they didn't for a long time, and so it, like the very best rivalries, it grew organically. I've just been to so many great Geelong Hawthorn games on Easter Monday to think that there's a better rivalry in the competition, and I also wouldn't be surprised if Hawthorn jab one back at Geelong this week.
I'm tipping the Cats.
Do you think Geelong have just got a little bit too much quality?
I just think they're a better club, but they're better this year. And I was concerned by what I saw last week with Hawthorn. They will miss Frawley. Amir is a wonderful player. Yeah, no, I'm tipping the Cats.
Yeah, I'm reserving judgment till later in the week. I've just got this. Whatever happens, those games, like, funnily enough, the other game that seems to throw up unexpected underdog stories is the Carlton-Essendon games tend to throw in strange things. It'll be interesting to see if Jeff Kennett has anything to say before the game, Caro.
How's he been going this year?
It's been pretty silent. Hasn't said, well, he has a bit to say in president's meetings, and he did this year, but no, he's been pretty good. I think we've barely heard from him at all, have we?
Comparatively little, yeah. We wait for a Tasmania.
Come on, Jeff. No, I think the problem with the Easter Monday game is that you leave the game thinking, well, Geelong are going to win the flag, or Hawthorn are back, and, you know, because the game is always so fantastic.
More unto itself.
Yep. But, I mean, Anzac Day has done that in the past too. Often the underdog has got up and won. Yep. But no, I'm tipping the Cats.
All right. We'll come back with quick questions.
Get access to every episode as it drops. Hit subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Rough hit. High and wide. Oh, Crozier! Big, big climb!
Well, that was probably the early clubhouse leader. We're speaking just after the Tiger Woods breakthrough in the US Masters bore me. Is that the clubhouse leader for Mark, that Hayden Crozier mark for Mark of the year? And did it save the scrappy, dour first half of the Collingwood Bulldogs game?
Yes, it's probably the clubhouse leader. No, it didn't save the game. I was sitting with my sons watching that game that night, and there was a sore temptation to leave at halftime, so no.
Well, you would have missed a great comeback by Collingwood late in the game.
I stayed.
Now, we talk about Adelaide's problems, Caro. We've had a bit of discussion. Should Adelaide have made Rory Sloane outright captain and deposed Tex Walker?
Definitive yes, Jake. Taylor Walker's been a very good player, but he has not had. He did not come off the back of a good season. A couple of things happened off field that weren't really up to scratch for a captain last year.
Such as?
Oh, well, there was a drinking situation where he was penalised by the club. I don't think he did enough at the start of the season to get around some of his teammates after the camp controversy. And I think they kept him captain because it was a compromise. And footy clubs like Adelaide don't normally compromise. Rory Sloane deserved to be captain.
Which is to AFLW, we've got this sort of frenetic trading going on. Which is a bigger move, Katie Brennan to Richmond or Bree Davey to Collingwood? Bormy.
Bree Davey to Collingwood. Anyone moving from Carlton to Collingwood in footy is
happens all the time, Bormy.
Also, it gives
it happens all the time, and it raises hackles every time. And it's raising hackles at Carlton right now.
And what I like about Katie Brennan going to Richmond is that they've got another KB.
I don't like it. You don't I don't like it? No.
You think this?
She's a captain of the Western Bulldogs, one of the inaugural teams. You're trying to build something here, and
have they got this wrong, Caro?
It sends a bad message for mine. I mean, I love Katie Brennan, I love Brianna Davey, but I thought for Katie to leave her team, and I know she was offered a lot more money, and I understand that she has every right to capitalise on what she can make out of her career, given the limitations these girls have faced for years. But
she was very coy. I asked her on radio on Saturday what she was getting off field, and there was really no answer, Caro. She just didn't want to address it. And I asked twice. I said, well, you didn't answer the question, and closed down completely, because I do believe this is how the players basically change clubs. It's particularly the marquee players.
Don't like it.
The caveat, I suppose, is that the competition's growing, so the players have to be distributed evenly. So we like it or not like it, you're going to see a lot of it.
Right. Now, we're looking at Saturday afternoon footy. This week, GWS v Freo is the only Saturday afternoon game, Caro. And the following week, the Q Clash. Is the AFL killing Saturday afternoon footy?
Well, you've just answered your own question, Jake.
Well, why? What should they do? What should happen here?
I understand there are restrictions because you've got Anzac Day and Anzac Eve, and obviously those situations make a big difference. But when you start the season with no Saturday afternoon game because they were going to play the women's final and there was nothing. Yeah, I think they are killing Saturday afternoon footy. The only person in this room is happy about that is Greg Baum, because he goes and watches
Saturday afternoon
the old Zavs.
Saturday afternoon AFL is dead to me anyway, and has been for a long time. It's very disillusioned, unbeaten in two games, degrade.
Seriously, Baum, do you think it is now going to be, it should be grassroots? The AFL maybe should actually let it go almost and let grassroots footy occupy that space?
I don't mind if it does. I mean, footy's played every 4 days a week, most weeks now, day, night. There are plenty of time slots. It's not a Saturday afternoon. AFL is not a Saturday afternoon game anymore. There should be good games there occasionally, but I don't see it as a marquee time slot. And I'm quite happy for, I am involved with the amateurs, and I do enjoy it. I know a lot of other people who enjoy it, and it does leave that window free for that type of footy.
Well, I love Saturday afternoons as a footy fan. I was at the MCG on Saturday. I actually walked there and I walked home. It was a beautiful day. The place, Richmond, was streaming with supporters of, but there were Fitzroy scarves, there was Brisbane scarves, there was heaps of Essendon. I love it. It's one of the great traditions of our great game. And how many traditions are we going to kill off before we turn around and realise that we don't have any traditions anymore? Don't like it.
On that note, that's all we've got time for. Thank you to you, Caroline Wilson, and Greg Baum for joining us. Thank you to Fox Footy and Channel 7 for the audio we've used this week. And to the listeners out there, don't forget, we have a new email address. So make sure you send your feedback to realfootypod@theage.com.au. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back due to the Easter Monday game next Tuesday.